Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studio, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The Score!
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series! The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The Cubs have done it. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins.
Welcome back into Inside the Clubhouse. Ryan Porth in for David Hall alongside Bruce Levine here on this Saturday morning here in Chicago. What you heard there, of course, Pat Hughes' final call of the 2016 World Series in Game 7 with the Cubs defeating Cleveland. And joining us now is the manager of that team, Joe Maddon. Joe, thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking. And it's so wonderful to hear Pat's voice again. And Pat and I got to be really close friends. Of course, he's Hall of Fame there now. Just love to hear that call.
Yeah, let's reflect on that. And Joe, great to have you on with Ryan and
thanks,
myself.
Bruce.
It's always a pleasure to have a great friend on the show. But just a little reflection. You mentioned Pat last week going into the Cubs Hall of Fame. What a great honor and what a great man.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard about it, read about it somewhere. And all I can think about is my conversations with him. Did some commercials with him over at Vinny's, too. Just an absolute junkie for baseball. He's one of the all-time greats. But I just love the company. I love the conversation. I love just hanging out with Pat. He's iconic. He's just got that different way about him, which I guess makes you iconic. But I'm really pleased for him and his family.
Joe, we're going to get to your book. The book is called The Book of Joe, Trying Not to Suck at Baseball and Life, along with Tom Verducci, and you can find it on Amazon in a moment here. But what has life been like actually being able to enjoy golf this summer, being able to enjoy the 4th of July with Jay mm-hmm. and other family members and friends living up in Pennsylvania? How has life been for Joe Maddon this summer?
The three G's, golfing, gardening, and grilling, and literally almost every day. And I think it has occurred every day since I've been home on July 1st. There's nothing, I'm very, maybe biased, but I do believe nothing better than a Pennsylvania summer. I'm getting to enjoy that for the first time. 79 or 80, you know, I was here at different times in those years. And just something about it. I live in a valley down here in the Cunningham Valley, right over the hill from Hazleton. And it's a gorgeous place, absolutely gorgeous. And I'm right on the Valley Country Club golf course. So I'm with friends and family, like you suggested, all the time. It's really been fun because I haven't done this and I forgot how wonderful it actually is.
Joe, the Book of Joe coming out on October 11th, like Bruce said. So, Joe, what will people buying this book, what will they read? What will they take away from when they make this purchase on October 11th when the book comes out?
Well, I talked, you know, Tommy Verducci and I got together, and the concept was to compare and contrast managing it from the 1980s to present time, overarching concept. Beyond all that, they really wanted to delve into the madnisms, the different, you know, bumps along the way, some successes, a lot of bumps in the road, and pretty much how it got me to the point that I arrived. So it's a lot of that, little stories here and there. But Tommy does such wonderful research, taking my different thoughts or concepts and backing them up. Really, really well done. He's really skillful, and I think that people are just going to enjoy it from the perspective of reading something that Tom Verducci wrote, because he's that good. Beyond that, there's a chapter about the Cubbies, and there's a chapter about the Angels at the end. They asked me to add on at the very conclusion. So it's not any kind of burning scorched earth kind of thing. It's just an explanation. I think it applies not only to sports folks, whether baseball or other sports, but also I think the business community might find it interesting too. So it's kind of all encompassing, which is what I wanted. If I was ever going to do a book, I wanted it to be more than just that Joey grew up on 11th Street.
Joe Madden, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse, always engaging, always fun. And Joe, you were on ESPN's Sunday night game last week, and you didn't pull any punches. You talked directly about how metrics people have impacted and infiltrated the manager's clubhouse, and how it's impacted the game and taken the power and the authority away from managers and coaches. I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit on your thoughts about where the game has to go to get back to managers and coaches actually having an impact on the modern player.
That's a good recap, Bruce, but you always do that. What I'd like to say, listen, I'm all about information. I don't, whatever you want to call information, if you want to call it analytics, metrics, information, scouting reports, whatever you want to call it, I'm all about it. I've done that for years. I've actually was doing it before it became popular. In the 90s, I used to extrapolate information from just say statistical sheets or the notes that I kept myself. And eventually I went with the Rays, and I got to that point, and Andrew wanted to know what I wanted. What do I like? And so we got together and we started putting together like a scouting report based on that. And then all of a sudden more people entered baseball ops. And so the information is gotten for you. So you don't have to spend all this time researching, and then you could apply your time in other areas. Great, great concept. I love it. The point I'd like to see is that moving it forward is that, yeah, I want all of this stuff. I'm not saying get rid of this stuff by any means. What I'm saying is put more power in the hands of the coaches and the managers. It's right at the point where analytics is running baseball as opposed to analytics supporting the game. And with that, I'd like to see whomever's in baseball ops or in charge of analytics, they answer directly to coaches and managers, and not the other way around. Trust me, it is the other way around. And I know some guys will have to explain it in another way because I'm not working right now, so I can be a little bit more brutally honest. But it's true. I mean, all the guys I've spoken to, I've gotten a million texts and emails and phone calls from managers, present and past, and GMs, present and past, not present but past, that agree a lot, primarily all of what I've been talking about. So keep it, yes, but put the power back in the hands of the coaches and the manager and permit this stuff to be a supplement and not running the game.
Just to follow up on that, Joe, has this become a way that presidents and general managers of teams help them with their relationships with the owners to keep the power down in the locker room and the manager and the coaches? In other words, I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay. I really don't know that that's it as much. I just think that the owners like the approach, the something that they can relate to and from their businesses and something that's going on within their businesses that's more relatable than talking about pitching mechanics or hitting mechanics or, the proper way to set up a cutoff and relay or bunt defenses. It's just it's a conversation that I think that's relatable to the ownership as well as the front office guys. So I think that's where that comes from. I don't think it's any more deep than that. But from the front office perspective, it's just the ability to be more controlling and be more controlling and have more say-so in the event. What you don't understand is that when you get too much stuff and too many people talking to you before the game, then the game becomes cloudy. Thoughts become confusing. And it's quite frankly, you hear a thought or somebody talking to you right before the game, and here comes a critical moment in the game, and you have to make a decision. And sometimes, and a lot of times for me, it might be based on, I got to go with what I believe and I feel and I think. I want to use this other stuff, like again, to augment it, but the voices make it more difficult, make it confusing. And that's what, if you've never done it before, that's what people don't understand. I prefer no conversations, especially hour and a half before the game. I prefer my work being given to me in the morning that I can sit and digest over a nice cup of coffee, PDF files, video files. My goodness, you don't need anything else. And then you just need to talk to your players. Less presenters, more coaches and teachers.
Joe Maddon is here with us on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. All guests join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Joe, sticking on the state of baseball, there are rule changes implemented for 2023, including the banning of the shift for defenses across Major League Baseball. What was your reaction to that?
Well, and again, I was like one of the first to do that in the 90s versus Ken Griffey Jr. at Anaheim Stadium. And as I moved it forward, we even did the four-man outfield several times with the Rays. I had total support from Andrew and the group. I believe in organic shifts because I don't know that you're going to get the result that you're desiring by banning the shift. I keep hearing about the proliferation of the singles hitter and the contact guy because you've taken the shift away. The shift was never designed to stop these people in the first place. It's always been open to singles hitters, contact hitters, et cetera. If you want to, if the ownership or the front office wants to employ those guys, they've been there. They've been there for the last 10, 15 years. They've been there. But if you want to employ power, you're okay with the strikeout, look for the walk, try to hit the ball over the defense, you're going to continue to obtain left-handed pull hitters with power. And now it's even more so because there's only one guy, first baseman plus one, on that side to defend. So I'm not into this as much. I love the clock. I think the pace clock is outstanding. But when it comes down to banning the shift to get a different result, I think you're going to get more of the same, or actually, like, more of it, yeah, because you're going to see more left-handed pull hitters in the lineup, I believe.
Joe, you mentioned the pitch clock. That's also being enforced starting next season. My biggest question with it is, are they actually going to enforce that pitch clock in, say, the bottom of the ninth, tied game, or in the World Series at any point? Or is this just going to be something that they enforce for a little bit to start next season, and then it just kind of fades back into what it is, or be inconsistent? What do you expect out of that?
I expect it to be all the way through. There's no reason to not. I mean, once you've done it during spring training in a regular season, the players are going to be used to it. It's not like they're going to all of a sudden want more time. More time maybe for commercial, more time to, from some people's perspective, to pour out more information, which again is not necessary for me. When you get to the playoffs, I want less, not more. So I think it's going to become habit. I think the players are going to like it. I think the fans are going to like it. That's the one rule change I've been looking for out of all of them. I mean, the three batter minimum, runner on second base, every other rule implementation, I've really been that excited about, but this is the one I've been excited about. When you have the pitcher getting the ball, throwing the ball, hitter getting in the box, play resuming, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about pace of play. I've never been concerned about the length of the game. I don't think most people are. If the game's happening quickly with action, you're not going to be concerned. Look, oh, it was 3 hours and 5 minutes. So it's all about the pace, and I like that one a lot.
Joe, I've been getting texts and a couple calls through since people knew you were coming on, and they wanted me to ask you about whether you would be interested in the White Sox job. I let them know that that would be disrespectful to the manager sitting there, to the interim manager that's running the team. But I will ask you what your thoughts are about managing in the future, and if the game is still something that you want to do. Is that a job that Joe Maddon still wants to do in the future?
Well, your answer about the White Sox situation is 100% correct, which you normally are. Yeah, I would like to do it in the future, but again, even to this point, we could talk for hours about this. It would have to be with the right group, and I believe a lot of these conversations I'm having in conjunction with the book is going to determine whether I get an opportunity or not, but that's good because I don't want to go anywhere under false pretenses. I want to go somewhere where ownership and front office really wants to try to balance this whole thing out and not have so much heavily slanted based on information. Excuse me. That to me is not attractive at all. I don't want to go back into the same marriage that I've had in the past. I would want something in the past, like 20 years ago, but not in the more recent past. So I'm absolutely interested. It'd be fun to really work with somebody dedicated to the regular game of baseball being supplemented by information, whereas you could then hire like a mega coaching staff, both in the majors and the minor leagues, and you get real scouts back on the road to supplement all this other stuff, which I would want, absolutely, 100%. But the human being needs to be employed. We're really subtracting the human element from almost everything in our life, even like going to the checkout stand. It's all computerized now. I want real coaches. I want baseball ops to be less. I want analytical people answering the coaches and managers. And I want real baseball teachers in the dugout in my clubhouse running my minor league system. Someone to pass the game along to the next generation, because there's very few people doing that right now, if at all.
Joe, in Anaheim, you had the opportunity to manage Shohei Ohtani. And a word that a lot of people use to describe him in terms of his uniqueness is unicorn, and just how just unbelievable he is at both pitching and hitting. How can you put into words what you saw from Shohei, both at the plate and on the mound, to result in this once-in-a-generation, if even that, player that a lot of baseball fans tune into every night just to see him either hit home runs or throw 10 strikeouts?
Yeah, the best player in Little League, the best player in high school, the best player on your college team, but all of a sudden he's doing against the best players in the world. There's a difference there. To be able to do what he does offensively with his legs, not just with the bat, with his legs, and then every fifth day or sixth day, go out to the mound. And right now he's throwing the ball as well as he's ever thrown the ball. Unless you've really done that, it's staggering. It's mind blowing in a sense. You just, like you said, it's not generational. I think this is whatever you consider the last century, the next century. There might be another one coming, a centurion coming along down the road, but it's that different. It is unicorn. It's that unique to do it at the level that he does, with the energy that he does, with the ability to stay healthy as he does. All the things that people just take for granted because he's going to hit tonight or he's going to pitch tonight, please do not. It's just a different caliber of an athlete. And on top of that, everybody talks about, we're talking about analytics, et cetera. And he does videotape a lot of what he does, him and Ipe, his translator, who I also love. They video. Shohei doesn't need a whole lot of intel and information. This guy competes, and he feels, and he sees. And I'd like to see that be the method that a lot more baseball athletes employ.
One follow-up to that. There's a big debate in baseball circles as the regular season is coming to a close of AL MVP Aaron Judge having this monster season in New York, hitting 20 more home runs than the rest of the field for the Yankees. They're going to win the division. And then you have Ohtani, who's going to lead the Angels in innings pitched and at-bats this season. Again, even more than just once in a generation type of player, who in your mind, Joe, should be AL MVP?
Well, why can't there be co-MVPs? I was thinking about that the other day. Has there been?
Yeah, 1979, Keith Hernandez and Willie Stargell both had same amount of votes, and they were co-MVPs.
But Bruce, you see, I could always rely on Bruce. Thank you for that. I thought there's no way to differentiate here. I mean, this guy, hopefully Judge will break that 61 and get to that 62nd home run. I like this man. I had a great conversation with him in New York when we were there earlier in the year with the Angels. Anthony went out to see Anthony, and Judge was there. This guy's impressive. This guy's a real baseball player. He's an impressive young man. I can see the just dripping with leadership qualities. love to see. I mean, I'd love to see him get rewarded. And by the same token, my guy, Shohei. Again, you can't underestimate what he's done. He's followed up last season with this season. And I guess, is he second in the home run race or is Mikey in second, right? I'm not even sure. But regardless, this is a time that it would have to be circumstantial. I'd love to see them both be awarded this. And I'm not trying to get off this thing easily because it's really hard to say one's been greater than the other. With Judge, the Yankees would not be in a position that they're in without him. I could say that, I think, easily. Whereas the Angels are not in any kind of a pennant race right now. But when Trout's gone, whatever, who knows what the record would have been out there without Shohei. So it's pretty darn even. I'd love to see them both be rewarded.
Joe, in closing, the book of Joe, Trying Not to Suck at Baseball and Life, co-written with Tom Verducci, get it on Amazon. I'm sure you delve into this, but my final question to you is dealing with the modern player and getting them to play the right amount of games, not 162 necessarily, but the right amount of games to get optimum amount of their ability out of them to help them be team players. Do you feel that mental skills departments are essential to getting the most out of these players? And also, would it be best that every baseball player during a baseball season had 2, 4, or 5 day periods off during the year that they can take?
Okay, let me see. I first of all, I'm so into the mental skills. I think that my boy Kenny Revizza, who passed away a couple years ago, Kenny was the best. Harvey Dorfman was outstanding. Yes, the sport needs them, but there's not a lot of those out there, quite frankly. It's hard to find that kind of presence, people with that kind of information and intelligence that are able to challenge a Major League Baseball player and feel good about it. Yes, I'd like to see more, but I don't know who those guys are right now. What was the second part of that? That last question was a good one.
The second part, Joe, is do you think, like every other job in the world, that baseball people and players, coaches, managers should have time off during this season?
Yeah.
Weekends.
Well, you got the All-Star break, of course.
Sorry. But I mean, should they be able to say, hey, I'd like to take my weekend off during the baseball season here and have it organized? In other words, would you get more optimum, would you get more out of the millennial player right now if they knew they had designated times off during the season where they didn't have to show up?
That's a great question again, Bruce. I haven't thought about it because for me, you could build those into your regular schedule in advance the way it is right now. For example, I'm big on when we have a planned day off. I would like to, a lot of times, would give whomever this player is, the everyday player, he gets the day off before the day off or the day off after the day off, which sometimes if there's a day game involved almost feels like 3 days. And if you were to do that, to not use them off the bench at all, just tell them you're down. Okay, you're off today. We're playing the game, but you're not going to come in. You're off tomorrow, so the next day you're going to play is going to be on Friday, as an example. And you could take it to the next extreme. Day before the off day, day after the off day, if you feel it's necessary. I know there's all kinds of studies being done about when a person needs rest and they're trying to extrapolate information regarding how many times you ran hard. And listen, it's a conversation and it's observation. You could watch a player. And I have a pretty good idea this guy needs a break. And sometimes, you just alluded to, it's a mental break more than it's a physical break. So this is a conversation that needs to occur constantly with your everyday players. And if you have the good fortune of having them stay healthy all year, you could figure that out. So again, with good health, we could throw that in there because how many guys are actually healthy enough that they're going to play all year without having to get a forced couple days off based off of injury? So there's so many ways to look at this, but I think through conversation, you can handle that by being proactive in advance of days off.
It's called The Book of Joe, Trying Not to Suck at Baseball and Life, co-written with Tom Verducci by Joe Madden. Pick it up on Amazon. It's a great read. I've had the good fortune of reading it. It's fantastic. So please pick it up and buy it. Joe, thanks for joining Ryan and myself today. It's always a pleasure. It's just great. I'm hoping next year that you are managing somewhere where you feel you can have an impact.
Thank you, brother. It's always great speaking to you and being in your company. Ryan, thank you for the great questions. All my fans and friends back in Chicago, we miss you guys. Probably the best five ever in baseball for me, 5 years. But we'll see what happens down the road. In the meantime, have a great holiday season, and we'll see what occurs.
Mitch Rosen says hello, by the way.
Hi, Mitch.
All right, just for you, Mitch.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Be well. Have a great day.
All right, that was Joe Maddon, former manager of the Chicago Cubs and the Rays and the Angels, currently a free agent manager out there in Major League Baseball. And, Bruce, it sounds like if the right situation comes along, he would like to get back in the game next season.
Right. I mean, look, I got a ton of texts here during this segment and people knowing, saying, please ask him if he'll manage the White Sox. Does he want to manage the White Sox? You can't do that. You can't do that with a manager sitting there. But I will tell you that if a job like the White Sox opens up, and I know that Joe has great respect for everybody in Chicago and got to know Jerry Reinsdorf and the other side of town while he was managing the Cubs, I'm sure he would be open to it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
If Tony decides to do something else, the White Sox decide to open up that job. But that's a conversation for later on. It's certainly not one that Joe would get into today.
Of course, of course. Speaking of the White Sox and speaking of Tony La Russa, the next chapter of the soap opera that has been Tony La Russa and the White Sox, it was written this week both by Bob Nightingale and Ken Rosenthal. We'll react to those stories. Has Miguel Cairo, in the interim, done enough to consider full-time managing starting next season if Tony La Russa were not the manager of the Sox? We'll get into all of that on the other side. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan Porth. And for David Haw this morning on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
And that'll do it. Engel makes a catch. Kreidler scores, and the Tigers take the opener.
That was the final call of last night's Chicago White Sox loss in extras to the Detroit Tigers, score of 3-2. The White Sox offense was dormant all game long until the eighth inning, where Jose Abreu had a two-run double, and then they didn't get a hit in the eight at-bats after that two-run double by Abreu and end up losing 3-2 in 10 innings. And they are now four games back in the American League Central race. They have a game tonight in Detroit with Johnny Cueto on the mound. The Guardians, who came back to beat Minnesota last night in Cleveland, they have a doubleheader at home against the Twins today. So a lot more baseball to be played here in the next few days before the Guardians make it here to Chicago for a huge three-game series starting Tuesday night at Guaranteed Rate Field. Bruce, We've mentioned Tony La Russa's name a few times here this morning already on Inside the Clubhouse. But let's get a little deeper on the stories that came out this week, both from Bob Nightingale and Ken Rosenthal. Bob Nightingale of USA Today having players on the record talking about the differences that they have felt in the clubhouse and on the field in the last few weeks since Miguel Cairo took over in La Russa's absence. And then Ken Rosenthal with an open letter at The Athletic to Tony La Russa, but it was very obvious that he had spoken to someone in the White Sox front office that was giving him some info on some of the frustrations of the coaching staff and of the organization with La Russa this season. What were your takeaways from those two stories that came out from two well-respected writers in Nightingale and Rosenthal this week on the state of La Russa and the Sox?
Well, number one, that Tony La Russa won't want to come back as the manager of the White Sox. Okay, I don't think you've heard that from anyone else, and that's my perspective, is that without the full support of the front office, and if players are questioning him, I don't think he'd want to come back. But I don't think that it's an interesting situation because in a sense he's being forced out. Okay. Being forced out by the fact that he got sick, had to attend to that, and that the White Sox started to play better baseball under Miguel Cairo at that time. What's missing from that element is that Lance Lynn started to pitch like Lance Lynn, Eloy Jimenez started to hit like Eloy Jimenez, and the team started to hit home runs. Something that Tony La Russa had nor Miguel Cairo have any impact on whatsoever. The fact that these people are playing up to their level. This isn't varsity baseball. This isn't go out there and win one for the coach. This is all about professionals who are just coming off of winning a division last year, not playing up to their ability because of injury and because of not being able to attain the same levels that they did the prior year. So, again, does it fall on the manager? Does the manager have to have culpability? Do they have to take the blame? Yes, that's the way sports goes. That's the way it's going here. That's why people are pushing back for that Tony shouldn't come back. I don't think he will be back. But I think it'll be a statement from him and from Jerry Reinsdorf at some point about where he's at as far as what he wants to do, what Jerry wants to do. This is still Jerry Reinsdorf's team. Regardless of what sources come out with information for Ken Rosenthal or myself or for Bob Nightingale, it's going to be run, and the final answer is going to be Jerry Reinsdorf sitting down with Tony La Russa, Jerry Reinsdorf sitting down with Kenny Williams, Jerry Reinsdorf sitting down with Rick Hahn and deciding what's best for the Chicago White Sox moving forward. The impact of you and I and fans saying Tony should stay or go has little effect on this.
Well, it has little effect, but I don't think Tony La Russa has any business being the manager of this team moving forward. That's, you know, all summer long, there's been this blame pie that a lot of us here on The Score or media in town have been trying to delve out in terms of who's most to blame for the White Sox struggles and underachieving all season long, whether it's Tony La Russa, whether it's Rick Hahn, whether it's the players. And I was probably about 70-80% of the way there with Tony La Russa all summer long. And I feel even stronger about it after these two stories came out with players on the record and Ken Rosenthal being very well plugged in with Major League Baseball, basically calling out what's been wrong with the Sox all season long this week and seeing the different vibe of this Sox team in the last few weeks with Miguel Cairo managing. I don't think it's a coincidence that here in the last few weeks, suddenly they're starting to hit for power, and they've been one of the best power teams offensively ever since Tony La Russa took his absence. And I'll also bring up the body language. The body language of this team is just feels night and day compared to what it was with Tony as manager. And I'll bring up the two Oakland series as the example for this. There was a Saturday night home game against the A's back in, I think, July. They went on a walk-off wild pitch where they played poorly most of that game. The wild pitch happens, winning run comes in, and the players just kind of walk out of the dugout. There really wasn't this celebration from the team. You know, Tim Anderson is in the on-deck circle, and he just kind of walks towards home plate. It was this nonchalant, not even a celebration from the team after winning that game on a walk-off in the bottom of the ninth. And then you look at that team and their body language in Oakland last weekend, where they made that big comeback Friday night. They won 3 of 4. When they were making that comeback on Friday night, there was this energy that you could feel through the broadcast from that dugout of the desperation they were feeling of needing to win that game. But it was night and day compared to what we've seen from this Sox team all season long.
Ryan, where was that yesterday? Where was that on Wednesday? Are you missing those games? Is it just about the games they win that we're concentrating on, or on the total package of what the White Sox are in 2022?
Look, you bring up a valid point. Wednesday, they should have done a lot better against Kyle Freeland. Last night, they should have done a lot better against Matt Manning. These are not two Cy Young candidates that they looked, you know, dormant offensively against. But I don't think there's any denying that overall, since La Russa had his absence, when you look at the larger sample size of the summer and the smaller sample size of this month,
better, but
it's different.
A lot of it has to do with a healthy Lance Lynn. Have you noticed what he's done over his last four or five starts, going back even to when La Russa was running the team? Have you noticed what Eloy Jimenez is doing as a healthy player now, carrying the offense? This has very little to do with Tony La Russa. I don't disagree that they've shown more energy lately, but the energy and the fun in baseball is predicated by who's out there on the field with you, what you're doing on the field, what you're capable of doing. With all due respect to the roster that Tony La Russa had out there most of the year, there were four or five guys that were not supposed to be starting games for the White Sox all year because of injury. Let's be honest about it, okay? So you didn't have Eloy Jimenez, you didn't have Robert, you didn't have Lynn playing up to the abilities that they have and the potential they have. It's been a different team. There has been a different energy level, but a lot of it's been predicated on health of important players contributing to the team. I'm not saying that Tony La Russa had the greatest year in his history as a manager here. I'm just saying there's been a perception all year long that every win that the White Sox have had was because of the White Sox players doing a great job, and every loss that the White Sox have had all year being the fault of Tony La Russa. That can't possibly be true.
Miguel Cairo is in an interesting spot here, and we'll see if he gets a shot to manage the White Sox past this season if Tony La Russa has managed his last game with the Chicago White Sox. Coming up next, we go around the league. Two home run chases for history that have been enthralling for a lot of baseball fans. We'll get into the fact that Albert Pujols is chasing 700 and that Aaron Judge is chasing a Yankees record. That's all coming up next. I'm Ryan Porthen for David Haw alongside Bruce Levine. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back into Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. Ryan Porthen for David Haw this morning alongside the great Bruce Levine. Bruce, let's go around the league a little bit here in the final few minutes of the show. There are a couple of home run chases going on right now in pursuit of history that have captivated a lot of baseball fans around the country. First of all, Albert Pujols going for 700. Last night, he hit number 698 at home in St. Louis. You also have Aaron Judge going for the Yankees single season home run record. He's also going for the AL MVP. It's his contract year. So there's a lot of mixed emotions from Yankees fans who are watching Aaron Judge right now as he's currently sitting on 57 home runs, which is 19 more home runs than anybody else in Major League Baseball. For you, Bruce, which home run chase are you paying attention to more, Judge in New York or Pujols in St. Louis?
I think they're both fascinating. And Pujols and Judge, excuse me, Ryan, have one thing in common. That is, both of their teams are in first place. Both of them will be impactful. Everything they're doing all year is impactful to their teams winning and going on to the playoffs, which is huge for me. You can't ignore the Pujols thing. It's just been phenomenal what he's done in the second half here. And give Ali Marmol, the manager of the Cardinals, a lot of credit for handling him perfectly, getting him in there in the right situations in the second half. But to me, the thing that is so historic about what Judge is doing is that, consider this, Ryan. Babe Ruth had to face just 67 different pitchers in 1927 when he hit 60 home runs. Roger Maris had to face just 101 different pitchers in his pursuit of 61 in 1961. Aaron Judge has faced 234 different pitchers and hit 57 home runs in an era where everybody throws 98 up and out and has great breaking stuff down and away and down. Okay, to me, this is one of the most tremendous seasons and accomplishments in baseball history, regardless of the era, for all that I've just said. I think, as you mentioned, Ryan, coming in, outdistancing everyone else by 19 home runs in an era where they're using the humidor this year, home runs are down all across baseball. There might not be another 40 home run hitter in baseball this year. He's going to break Maris's American League record of 61. Just absolutely, to me, phenomenal. So taking nothing away from what's going on with Pujols, to me, Judge is the story of 2022.
I will disagree on which one is more fascinating, because this is it for Pujols, right? I mean, it's not like he's planning on coming back next season and going for 700. Time is ticking on his career. And he is now two home runs away from 700. Every time he comes up to the plate in St. Louis, all the Cardinals fans are standing, and he's under a ton of pressure just to hit a home run, and he has been doing it with great regularity since the start of August. And as a Cardinals fan out there, you have to be thinking, like, this is like finding a $100 bill in your pocket, because they didn't think Pujols was ever going to play for the Cardinals again. And here he is on the doorstep of 700 in a Cardinals uniform. And the fact that we may not see another 700 home run hitter for a long, long time, even 500, 600. I mean, it's,
I don't think we'll ever see it. We'll never see it.
And you might be right.
Guys don't play enough games, Ryan. They don't post enough to be able to do that for 20 years. You have to hit how many home runs over 20 years? You have to hit an average of what? 35 a year times 20 years to hit 700. Just think about that, okay? And think about the modern player and how they don't post as much. Someone might be able to do it, but it's very doubtful. And your points are well taken. It's phenomenal what he's doing. Not only doing it, but doing it in big clutch situations, winning ball games doing it. So I don't take anything away from him. I'm just in awe of both of them. I think it's made for a great baseball season in 2022.
Absolutely. Pujols two away from 700. Only two others active in Major League Baseball right now have more than 400 home runs. So
I want to thank you for joining. It's been a great pleasure doing the show with you. We welcome David Haw back next week. People can follow me on Twitter, MLB Bruce Levine, on our website at 670score.com. And we have people to thank.
Absolutely. Thanks to PJ Higgins. Thanks to Joe Maddon for joining the show here. If you missed those interviews, you can catch them on the Inside the Clubhouse podcast feed here in just a little bit. Thanks to everyone who was texting in on the Text Zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com.
And thanks to you, Bruce Levine, for putting up with me for the last 2 hours of this baseball talk. So looking forward to doing it sometime down the road. For Bruce Levine, for Sean Sears behind the glass, I'm Ryan Porth. Coming up next, it is Saturday Suckage with Steve Rosenblum right here on 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.